Supas at his house. The date is December 26, 1988. What do you remember about World War II? Anything at all.
What I remember about it?
Yeah.
Well, in general, it's going to Europe. But I was inducted into the Army in 1943 and went to Camp Custer, where they issued you uniforms and everything, and then went to Florida for basic training. And after 3 weeks of basic training, then we went to armament school because I was assigned to the Air Force. And this was in Denver, Colorado. And we was there most of the summer. And then it was in the fall of the year that we left there and went to Washington, D.C. And we was assigned to a fighter squadron outfit at, they called it Camp Springs then, but it's Andrews Field today. And that's where we had our training for really war training with the airplanes. So working with the airplanes was probably a thing that sticks in my mind the most. From there, we went to New Jersey and actually was firing the guns and such on the planes. And then after that training, we left for overseas and went to England. And this was in February of 44. And of course, it was just prior to the invasion of France. And we flew combat missions out of England until June, which when the invasion was, and that was the 6th of June. And we landed in France the 9th of June, just after the initial landings in France. And then, of course, they wanted the planes that we were using to be right close to the front lines most all the time. And so we was in proximity to the war. We was close to the front, but we wasn't actually on the front. And of course, then we went all across France.
Yes.
And of course, spent one winter out. You might say outside. We stayed in tents. We never was in buildings. And it's kind of rough in the wintertime to be camping out all the time. So you learn all the little ways to keep warm. But we went all across France in the winter and Christmas time, and we was probably in central France. And that was right at the time of the Battle of the Bulge. We was right close to the Battle of the Bulge, and what sticks in my mind about the Battle of the Bulge is the weather was bad then, and we couldn't get in the air with the planes to help the fellows that were all pinned down in Belgium. We weren't very far from there, but we couldn't get the planes in the air because they couldn't see. But they did fly some supplies. We'd hang supplies on the wings of the planes, and they'd try to get in and fly in real low so they could drop them into the area where these fellows were pinned in there at Bastogne. And and we lost a couple of planes in those operations. And after that, then they quit until the weather cleared. So, but then after they cleared that out. And the war was all one way then, and we moved from there into Germany. And when we crossed the Rhine River, the war was really over with, because the trucks that were hauling up supplies, they were bringing back prisoners. And it just thousands and thousands of men that they'd stand up in a truck. They'd stand them up and stand them right out to the end of the tailgate and then shut the tailgate. That's how they'd cram them in there. That's how many men they'd put in the truck. And they were, the German prisoners were coming back. And we went into Nuremberg. And after we got to Nuremberg, we never did fly any combat missions after that. And it was just a matter of helping with prisoners and such as that. That's where the war ended, or that's where we was at when the war ended. But from there, we did go into Austria. We were stationed in Austria for a period of time. And then back into Germany. And then in November of 45. In fact, they had two Thanksgivings, and they had an early Thanksgiving and a late Thanksgiving they referred to. And we had a Thanksgiving in France in Le Havre, and then a Thanksgiving on the boat coming home. And that kind of stands out, because after living on field rations for the period of time we was over there, we get fresh cooked turkey and potatoes, good potatoes again. The Esau's had the old powdered potatoes and powdered eggs. They used to have a powdered egg that when they dehydrated food like that, well, they never could seem to recapture the taste. And that was one thing about the food. Always, it was good food, it was nutritious and everything, but the taste wasn't there. Well, I can't think of anything else unless there's questions you want to ask.
Yeah. What kind of uniforms did you wear?
Well, a combat uniform, what we used was mainly like a coverall. That's when the weather was warm. But in the winter, when it was cold, we had what we call flight clothes. And they were a sheepskin. They were a sheepskin lining, be wool lining. And actually, that's what they were, I think, was sheepskins, because the skin of the sheep was the outside of the coat, and then the wool was on the inside. And that's what you'd kept warm at when it was real cold. But is when you slept, when you wanted to sleep, and that's when you'd really had a tough time keeping warm. But you just didn't have, you had cots to sleep on, and you just couldn't get enough blankets and stuff to really keep warm. That's when you'd get cold, really, when you was wanting to sleep. But our clothes was, footwear was one thing that wasn't too adequate when the first winter, or the winter that we was over there, is we had just our, what they call a combat boot. And when those get wet, anytime your foot gets wet, you get cold. And I remember they used to go back to England, get your four buckle Arctics from the soldiers back there that didn't need them that bad, and ship them over to us to try to keep our feet dry so to keep warm. But most of those four buckles, when they come over there, they had holes in them both ends, and they didn't work too good, and they'd just get wet anyway. So. But it was hard. It was hard to keep warm and in the winter, to learn to, so you didn't suffer from the cold.
Did you have like mittens or hats or scarves?
Well, we had a. Of course, you wore your helmet. You wore your helmet a lot, and there's a liner. There's a liner you wore first, and then the steel helmet went on the liner. And unless you was going to be directly involved in combat, you never wore that steel helmet. You just wore the liner. But then they had a little stocking cap you'd wear before you put that liner on, because boy, I'll tell you, that thing was cold if you didn't have that stocking cap on. But we'd have a regular, very regular hat like you'd wear around today, you know, just a little bill on it, and like anybody, you know, working in the shop or such as that, we wore those as much as we could. And occasionally you'd find, you know, the guys innovate anything, you know, to make ear lappers on hats and such as that. But usually if it's ear lappers, well, it was usually those stocking caps that you pulled down over your ears.
Did you have gloves?
Yeah, we had regular gloves, just any, if I remember right, they were kind of a leather glove, kind of a leather face glove. They weren't heavy, but they had lining in them. So we had gloves.
It was a very violent war.
Yeah, anything in war is violent. When men come up against each other in battle like that, there's nothing that you don't give the other guy a chance. There's nothing fair. Don't say, well, you got to be fair. You do anything to win. And probably the worst thing that I've probably seen in the war, and I didn't see the worst of it. And that's how the Jewish people. There were some places where we saw some prison camps where they had these people, and they were probably more of a work camp than they were where they took them to exterminate them. And as the infantry went through and released these people, where the Germans would, when the infantry got near them, where they would attempt to destroy them. And probably the worst of seeing there is where they put them into a building and set it afire. And where people, it's a little hard to explain what they do to try to get out of there. But that's probably the worst thing. But anything in war is violent. You just pray that there just won't be another war. It's an awful thing to go through.
What could the Jews have to do with the war?
Well, it isn't what they had to do with the war. The Germans, and of course, this was Hitler. He was developing what he called a super race, and of course, they'd want to be German or Aryan. They called them. They know that the white people. He didn't refer to the Jewish as being white people, the Jewish people are smart. They seem to have control of finances, and they're always scientists. A lot of your scientists are Jewish, but Hitler didn't like them, and he was going to exterminate them, and that's what they done in the war. They just done anything to get rid of them. If you was Jewish, you had to hide it or bury it or hide yourself, because they'd get you they'd put you in work camps, or they'd just take you and exterminate you. They were just determined. Of course, today yet, because then they're changing some. The Russians they've really persecuted the Jewish people. And probably just like this country persecutes the black man. And that's getting better, but it's still, in some of your southern states yet, it's still a bad thing. They just won't have nothing to do with the black people.
What kind of weapons did you have?
Well, we, of course, we had the machine guns in the planes, and they were a fighter plane. Of course, the fighter plane is mainly a pursuit plane, what they call a pursuit plane, just using the guns, the machine guns. But they adapted these planes to carry bombs and use them as a bomber, and of course mainly for just low level attack. They didn't refer to them. They did refer to them as a fighter bomber. But it was all low level, because they only carried two bombs, and in some cases maybe three. And it'd be one under each wing and one on the belly. But you take like a B-17 and such as that, they'd probably carry as high as maybe 15, 20 bombs. So that's the difference between the planes that we had and a bomber. But we used bombs, and 500-pound bombs was the popular one. And they put one under each wing. And then we did use napalm. We used napalm some too. And they got some things that they just couldn't seem to destroy with a bomb, while they could use napalm. They use it on bridges. They burn bridges down, steel bridges. It just gets hot and melt. The weight of the bridge would break itself down. And it was a... But they didn't use napalm at that time against troops. They'd use them like against tanks and destroy bridges and such as that. They didn't actually go in and bomb troops with fire like that. But, they used everything else on it.
Do you remember anything about resistance fighters?
Yes, we had, when we first landed in France, and there was, well, they referred to them as resistance, and because when the gliders, they used gliders to take a lot of equipment into France on the initial invasion, and the Germans knew that they'd be using these gliders, so what they'd do, they'd take something like a telephone pole, and they'd set them up in fields, so you couldn't come down and land in a field without hitting those poles. And the night that they made the initial attack, where they dropped paratroopers and come in with the gliders, well, they notified the French that they were coming, and they went out and sawed a lot of those poles down, sawed them down, and done everything they could to help, you know, get those gliders in, as far as getting in direct contact with them, the only time I've had any direct contact with any of them was a lot of those fellows, they'd kind of like roam the country and blow up bridges and do anything to interrupt the Germans. They were mostly behind the German lines. But the initial invasion, they'd done a lot of that. They blew up a lot of bridges and cut telephone wires and done all this to disrupt anything that, you know, that set the Germans back. That's the only time we had any contact with them. As far as contact, we just maybe see them. That's about all.
Okay. What were the resistance fighters like? What was their purpose for doing all this?
Well, of course, they wanted to get the Germans out of their country. This would be just like this country. If we was invaded by a foreign army, and probably a lot of us would go into a resistance. You know, we'd hide. We wouldn't even... or if we did stay at home, you could do this without try to do it without being noticed, because you know what they'd do to you if they knew that you was involved in something like that. But you'd do anything to disrupt their operation, try to get them out of your country. That's mainly what one of the first I know when we first went into France, one of the first things they'd done. They brought a French division in because these fellows wanted to be in on this initial fighting to gain back their country, and so they brought they weren't really called a resistance. They were what they called the Free French, and they had come out of North Africa, because when France had to surrender to Germany, well, they took a lot of their soldiers and went down into Africa. And they formed another government there, and they called them the Free French. But they were all supplied by our country, and all their equipment was the same as ours.
Were their uniforms about the same as yours?
No. I don't remember too much of their uniform. Their helmet was shaped a little different. It seemed to me their helmet was a little bit different. Of course, I'm referring to like a dress uniform. That would be very much different than ours. But they had clothes that, of course, that this country had given them, the supplies and such, that would be very similar to ours, yeah. But when they dressed up in their dress uniforms, so it was a different color and it was a little different design. You could distinguish the difference.
What happened after Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany?
Well, things begin to change when trying to think about, because I was young, didn't pay too much to politics at that time. Of course, then as I got into the war, well, then you begin to realize what was going on. But it was all political, and this gets a little involved. Some of the things you read today, but he was determined he was going to rule the world. And, that was his, I because it only takes a nut to want to do that. So, and it did prove that that's what he was in the long run, because some of the movies you see now, some of the German generals and such as that, they can see that he wasn't making like right decisions and right moves and such as that. And in fact, they tried to assassinate him at one time, but they weren't successful. But he was going to rule the world and have a super race and destroy all the Jews. And I guess if you don't watch yourself, you could have something like that happen today. You wouldn't think so, but when people sit back and don't resist things like that, when next thing you know, they gain power. And that's how he done it. He just got a faction in Germany to follow him, and they got stronger and got stronger, and next thing you know it, well, he was a dictator.
Oh!
And running the country. Of course, after he got that, after he got his, like the Gestapo, that was his, like personal army. And they just seemed to rule the roost, and whatever they wanted to do, they done. And if you didn't do what they wanted to do, well, they just destroy you.
What was a super race?
Well, they selected young fellows, and I don't know how they done it, but they picked what they figured that I'd be better than him, or he'd be better than that guy, and this other guy would be better than me, and they always picked the best. And they even went as far as it'd be just about like raising cattle. They'd mate these fellows with girls, where they kept them in a place, and then the children from them would be set aside, that they were better than anybody else, you know, and that's what they was trying to do, is the Germans was going to be the super race, and most of those fellows, I can't just think of the outfits they had then, but they were usually an army outfit of their own. They didn't fight with a regular German army. They had the and those guys, I'll tell you, they had them indoctrinated that they just believed one thing, and that they were Almighty God, and that was it.
What was the Battle of the Bulge?
What it was, that the German army was getting beat pretty bad, and everything had been that pushed back. Of course, the Germans remembered in the First World War that they didn't want any foreign troops on German soil. And of course, this is what was happening, because we was getting onto German soil, and they still had some divisions in reserve. And what they was going to do, they was going to cut the supply line. A lot of supplies was coming in Holland then. That was closer. Our supplies could get to the front quicker coming in through Holland and Belgium than it was to come through Le Havre, which is in France. And so they made an attack right down the into that area, and they called that a bulge. When they broke through the lines, while they was trying to get to the sea, to the harbors, to get control of these harbors, so we couldn't ship supplies in there. And of course, when they broke through, well, they called that a bulge, you know, into your lines, because your lines were always straight, try to keep them straight, and that's why they call it the bulge. And it was done right in the wintertime, around Christmas time, and the weather was cold, bitter, you know, and it was really a, but it was the last gasp, you might say, that they tried to do something to stop us from winning, but it didn't. It just delayed it for a little while longer.
What do you remember about the times when, like, different countries were being invaded?
Well, I was in high school yet, and you get back in the mid mid-30s later, or not mid-30s, the late 30s. And I think that started in 36, 37. The war actually started over there. And Hitler would just decide to, I guess he took Austria first, and then he took Czechoslovakia, and nobody would stop him. You know, nobody wanted to, they thought that they could just keep negotiating and keep him from taking these countries. But negotiating never helped too much, and nobody seemed to nobody had the strength. He'd build a real big army, and his method of blitz, what they call a blitzkrieg, that's how they would attack, and everything would go fast. And they'd attack with airplanes, and then with tanks, and paratroopers, and they'd just bang, 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 and they'd move real quick, and when they got people to retreat once, they'd just never give them a chance to ever dig in and try to fight back. But they'd take a country over like that, nobody, of course, I think probably the main reason that nobody could stop him because they didn't have the strength. England didn't have the equipment and the men to fight, and this country was wanting to stay out of the war, and France didn't have anything, and their new method of warfare, this blitzkrieg thing, was they just couldn't cope with it.
What do you remember about the after effects of World War II? Like, how many people were killed?
Main thing that sticks in my mind when you talk about the after effects of the war was we had destroyed Germany from the air, and we'd blown up all like refineries and their factories, and rail lines were in bad shape. Of course, roads, bridges were all knocked down, and here Germany was defeated and no transportation, no food, everything was in disarray. And actually, had we stepped in and fed the German population at that time, they would have starved. And we had to go in and haul, set up transportation. In fact, they used army equipment to haul food in, and so these people could actually live. And I know when we'd be stationed outside of a village or a town, and the children, when it come time to eat, they'd come flocking, you know, and they'd pick food right out of the garbage cans, you know, because there just wasn't anything. There was no food, no way of, there was no supply, no nothing. And so we got so that we'd always get as much food as we could when we went through the chow line. And then we'd let the kids leave some for the kids to eat, you know. And you always had a lot of friends then, because when you'd sit down to eat, well, you'd always have some buddies sitting down. But that's one thing that stuck in my mind the most, is heading this country said, well, they treated the Jewish people bad, and we're going to do the same thing to them, and that wasn't really the answer to it. And of course, then the Russians, they decided they was going to isolate Berlin, because they had divided the country up into, like England had a part of Germany, and France had a part of Germany, and Russia did, and we did. Well, Berlin all was in the Russian sector, and then, of course, they sealed off, so you couldn't get in there via the road. So this country took it upon themselves, and they flew food and everything in, even coal had to be flown in to the heat for those people, because they could get in there with the airplanes, because Germany wouldn't let no trains or trucks or anything on the road, so they call that the Berlin Airlift. They broke the Russians from trying to keep us from supplying that part of Berlin. I don't know how long that went, but I know it went through one winter. It was real cold, because they had to fly coal in there too to help keep those people warm.
How many countries took part in the war?
Well, they call it a world war, and I think pretty well any country that had had any strength, had any kind of troops were involved. And of course, some of the countries were like a colony of England. They'd have troops from those countries come in because the English had trained those people. And there was I can remember seeing some black troops out of Africa, and some of the countries that were colonized by France and Sinhalese. I can remember the Sinhalese troops because they were an awful black. They were awful black, dark black people, and they were big. And those guys just weren't afraid of anything. They just, and we used to always, you could tell them because of their real dark color. And then they wore a little cap that looked like a flower pot upside down, and they were just bright red. And I'll tell you that if you could get a hold of one of those caps, that was quite a thing. But those guys, you. If you got that cap, you'd have to kill him to get it, because he wouldn't give up that cap. But pretty well ever cut it. Of course, you take that in the Pacific, in the Pacific part of the war, you had Japan and Australia. Of course, England was involved in there. French was involved in there. So you can name just about any country in the world was directly or indirectly involved in the war.
Do you remember how many people were killed approximately?
No, I wouldn't have any idea. The Russians, I can remember one figure that they said that when the Germans invaded Russia, and of course they went in there with about the same theory that they did with the Jewish people, you know, just destroy anything, everything, and kill a lot of people. And the Russians said they figured that between soldiers and civilians, that probably the Russians lost 20 million people.
What areas were the battlegrounds fought at?
Well, there was a lot of aerial battles. Of course, they could be any place, you know, in the air over Germany and over the different parts of France, as the bombers were flying to destroy rail lines and oil refineries and anything that to supply the war effort, but of course, the battleground that sticks in my mind would be in Normandy, where we landed in France, and then the you'd move real fast until they'd make a stand. And when we broke out of Normandy, St. Lô, that was probably the first. Well, it was the first battle we was involved in right after the invasion, And then the next battle, it wasn't until, really, they backed out of Paris. They didn't. There wasn't really no battle as far as Paris goes, and they just really started backing out of France, getting more towards Germany, and they'd make a stand here and there. But Italy, right up the boot of Italy, there was several places they made stands there because of the mountains. It was good places to fight back. But the flat country of France, when they started rolling, when the tanks started rolling once way, there wasn't too many places they made their stands. If they did, it was usually at like a river crossing, you know, which would be hard to cross, and they'd get on the other side, and then of course they'd try to keep from crossing. I think in the European theater, I had four or five battle stars. Well, I mean, they'd give you a star for each battle that you was involved in. And we had one of the invasion and one in central France, and I forget all the different areas that we was involved directly in the battle, you'd get a star for it. And I had four or five of them.
The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor.
Well, somebody wasn't thinking. Of course, they figured that, and which we were weak at that time. Of course, we had our navy all in that harbor, and that was a good way to destroy a lot of ships. And they were real successful at it because they tied these battleships up like side by side. They'd want to be up like to the pier, and then they'd just tie them side by side, right? You know, and you could destroy one, and practically destroy them all, you know, by just going in that was probably their main theory, was destroying a lot of the Navy, and which they did. But had they invaded Hawaiian Islands at that time, they could have walked right in and took it over, and that's where they made their big mistake by not invading the Hawaiian Islands. And it would have been tough. It'd have been a lot tougher if they had done that, but they didn't. And this country was lucky in some of the things that Japan done and Germany done, that they just didn't follow through when they did have an advantage on you.
What do you remember about when Germany surrendered?
I'm just trying to think of what we were doing and where we was at. I probably recollect the death of Roosevelt. It was probably the big shock, you know, and when he died, of course the war wasn't over then yet. But we were in actually when the war was over, we probably wasn't as elated as you would think you would be. Things just kind of died down and stopped, and all we could think of was to get home. You know, so really we didn't, we'd say dance in the streets and were real jubilant about it. You felt good about it, you know, the war was over. But we were kept busy, there was things to do yet, really, that's probably why I don't remember much about it, because you just went through kind of a transition from war to no war, and all you could think of was, well, let's get home. You know, you wanted to get home. That was probably the biggest thing of the troops. You'd been gone for 2-3 years, and all you could think of was get home. You wanted to get home.
Tell me what you remember about the cause of World War II.
Well, probably when you talk about causes, probably the thing behind it all was the Japanese. The Japanese, they were there thinking it was about the same as the Germans. They was going to control the Pacific and take over all those countries over there and colonize a lot of those countries. They thought that they needed a lot of resources that these countries had that they didn't have. They didn't have to buy them. They'd just take over a country and colonize it, and then they could just, you know, take things like that. Of course, when you look at our country and you look at the European countries, and those European countries, they're small, like one of our states. They aren't big. They're just about the size of some of our states. So when you talk about France and Germany and such like that, you think, well, they're a large country, but they aren't. There's a lot of those countries, they aren't even as big as the state of Texas. You know, and take like Belgium and Holland, they're real small. You know, they'd be like some of our smaller states in the East Coast, you know. And so there isn't much to them. But it's political, and the average person don't understand too much in politics. But what it was just people determined that they were going to rule. They was going to rule. They wanted to be the top hand. And it seems like three people always band together and end up winning in that. You didn't want to be... You didn't want to be ruled by dictatorship.
Was there a depression after World War II?
Not really. There was a depression there was a depression after World War One. Of course, it took it was in the late 20s before they really had a depression. Everybody predicted a depression, but actually it didn't. And everything went from building war goods to consumer goods, and we didn't really, we had our ups and downs in the economy, but no, not a depression like they remembered in the 30s. Things looked real well through the 50s and 60s, and of course when the soldiers all come home, they all called the baby boom. Everybody had raised a family, building houses, building cars and everything, and so the economy really boomed, and we didn't have a depression. We had some recessions when things got low, but we have that yet today too. You go through your good or better times, and it seems like you overproduce and then have to start over again. But everybody looked for a depression, but it never happened, and most of the people who were looking for and afraid of it were people that had lived right after the First World War, and they went through a depression. That was in the late 20s and into the mid-30s. Late 30s.
Who could you say won the war?
Well, as far as winning, I don't think anybody wins a war, because when it's all cut and dried, it seems like you've killed a lot of people, destroyed a lot of stuff, and you have to start over again. But as far as coming out on top, you refer to them as the Allies, which should be us and England and France and Russia. Well, I mean, Russia was included in that at one time, because when the war was over in Europe, well, then the Russians, they did join in into the Asian War to help defeat Japan. So really, Russia was an ally of ours at one time, and then of course after the Communist Party and they had other ideas than our what they call their closed society, where we referred to as open society, and that's what brought on the Cold War. Of course, the starting of the Cold War was when they closed off Berlin and tried to squeeze us out of Berlin, when we had to fly in food.